Okay, good evening. So we decided that tonight we would talk a little bit about the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim, which in a sense is a companion piece and somewhat of a continuation to what we spoke about last week when we spoke about Bikur Cholim, and also has a connection to this week's Parsha, to Parsha's Vayishlach. So hopefully the timing has some illumination as far as that's concerned as well. So as we've noted when talking about Chesed, so Chesed as a whole is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Yahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, also the mitzvah of Halachta B'Drachav, both of which are relevant here. Halachta B'Drachav is a context of this week's Parsha, where we find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a bracha to Yaakov on the passing of his father Yitzchak. We've also previously found in the Torah that God gives a bracha to Yitzchak on the passing of Avram. So that bracha is perceived by Chazal as an act of comfort. So that notion of nichum, of comforting, is modeled by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's one of the specific instances of how we imitate him in this sense of halachta b'drachav. But also the broader mitzvah of Yahavta L'Reicha Kamocha includes all of Chesed. We've noted that the Rambam says that the specific formulations that we have, such as Nichum Avelim and Bikur Cholim, are formulations on a level midrabanan. Rabbeinu Yonah, and among others, have emphasized that they see Nichum Avelim to be specifically a mitzvah min HaTorah. One way or another, the Rambam himself, in Hilchas Avel, gives particular significance, even within Chesed, to the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim, where he notes that it is a Chesed on two levels, because it's a Chesed both with those who are alive and those who are no longer alive. So that idea seems to be based on a Gemara in Maseches Shabbos, in Daf Kuftin Beis, where the Gemara tells us that if somebody would pass away without any mourners, so there is an idea. Well, the Gemara says that the nifter stays in the house for 7 days after he passes away. So based on that, we have this idea that there is a notion to come to the house even if there weren't any survivors and if there weren't any actual mourners. And that's what the Rambam's referring to when he says that it's a chesed both with the meisim and with the chayim. So it's a chesed with the meis, you are kielu coming to be mechabed him in his house, which is why in general there is a preference when possible for the shiva to take place in the home of the nifter. And of course it's a chesed to the survivors who have this idea of the Nichum coming to them as a chesed in their direction. Now, the notion, the way the Rambam formulates it, that if somebody would pass away without survivors, so then there should be a gathering of a minyan in his house, and they would serve as substitute mourners. The Ravid objects to this. He says it doesn't have a mucker. It's not clear exactly what the Ravid is objecting to. Lacha Mishnah suggests that maybe specifically this idea that they're taking on the status of Avelim. Maybe he thought that there was just a notion for them to come as a statement of Kavod, but they're not necessarily Avelim. Well, in any event, so this is how the Rambam understands that this is reflective of the idea that there is Kavod both to the Chaim and to the Mesim, as reflected by that din. It's interesting, as the Tshuvas B'Sel HaChachma notes, that the idea of gathering a minyan is interesting because we don't necessarily have a minyan in the normal sense of people who are actual Avelim. So when there is no surviving family, why we should require a minyan specifically is interesting, and he suggests that it is to compensate, that if somebody passes away without any survivors, so then there's a greater need to bring kavod to them. And that's why we require a minyan, which we wouldn't otherwise have. So this idea of volunteering to mourn, even if you're not actually a survivor, you're not actually a relative, is an idea that we find elsewhere. The Rashba points out that it sounds like from the Gemara Maseches Brachos that Rabbi Gamliel said Shiva for Tevi, his Eved. And the Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch that one who's not related could theoretically volunteer to join the family of Avelim. And Rav Soloveitchik was of the opinion that that's appropriate as the expression of mourning for an adopted child. So even if they're not biologically related, so they wouldn't have necessarily an actual chiyuv of Avelis, but clearly there is a mourning that is taking place, and there is a kar sakot tov that is taking place. So therefore, he thought that a volunteer to be an avel in that situation, following that model, would be appropriate. So the Rambam also notes, based on this idea, that it is a dual chesed, that because of that, nicham avelim should take priority over bikur cholim, because nicham avelim is two and bikur cholim is one. So the Radbaz, in his commentary over there, he thought that was shocking, he thought that couldn't be, and he would have thought that the opposite is true, because when we talk about bikur cholim, as we discussed a little bit last week, it has a component of pikuach nefesh. You could actually make a difference in whether the person recovers or not. So the idea that you should prioritize nicham avelim is surprising, because you would think that bikur cholim would have greater urgency. In fact, that's how some suggest that we have to figure out a different way to understand this Rambam. So some understand that he means only if you can only do one of the two, so then you should prioritize nicham avelim. But if you could do both, so then you should do bikur cholim first. But others challenge that in the Sefer Mishnas of Ram. So he notes that that's counterintuitive. You would start Mishnas Yaakov of Rabbi Yaakov Rosenthal. So he points out you would have thought the opposite. You would have thought that because bikur cholim has this life-saving component, so therefore if you can only do one, you have to do bikur cholim. But maybe if you could do both, okay, then maybe that's where the Rambam is coming from, that you could prioritize nicham avelim. In general, that whole language of prioritizing one chesed over the other, so later Sfarim discuss that, and the basic attitude often is that it's not really defined by one category over the other. Any type of chesed may have a specific urgency to it because of what's going on, and that's probably going to dictate what is going to be the priority. But in the conceptual, theoretical realms, what the Rambam writes, that there is a priority given to nicham avelim because of this dual component. So beyond that, there's also a diuk to be made in the Gemara. This is something the Or Sameach discusses in his commentary to the Rambam, that he notes that when the Gemara talks about in Maseches Shabbos in the first parak about nicham avelim and bikur cholim on Shabbos, so the Gemara mentions nicham avelim first, that they betiru l'nacham avelim l'vakar asacholim b'Shabbos. But when the Gemara talks in Maseches Sukkah about the both of them and about those who would walk around all day with the lulavim and how they would carry out the chasadim while they were walking around with the lulavim, so there it mentions bikur cholim before nicham avelim. So he thought, the Or Sameach, that that was because the avelis is not actually practiced on Yontif in the full sense, so therefore it's a little weaker, so maybe that switches the order. So it's specifically on Yontif that you have that kedimus. And others suggest, maybe a little bit more specifically, there's discussion about this in Mishnas Yavetz and elsewhere, and W.B. Warman has discussion about this, that maybe it's just a little bit more lumdish. You could say that if you don't have actual avelis on Yontif, so that means that the chesed that's happening is really the chesed for the mason. So if that's the case, so bikur cholim takes priority over the chesed for the mason. But at other times of the year, when both are applicable, so then the Rambam will be right, and nicham avelim would take priority. So what do we mean when we talk about nicham avelim? So what does the phrase mean? So to translate it literally, we would mean the comforting of mourners. So when one makes a shiva call, so does that convey that there is a certain specific nature of the call that is required? So the Prisha does note that just coming does have a kiyum on some level, because that is a kavod for the mason. It's also a comfort to the mourners who see that there is a crowd there. So on some level, that is a kiyum of something. But there's also desire to accomplish a more direct nichum, and we know that we have a formula, specifically among the Ashkenazim, we use the formula of Hamokum Minachem Eschem Besoch Shaveh L'Tzion V'Yishalayim, which is not a formula that's in the Gemara, but it's found in later Svarim. And this is considered to include a lot of messages within it. It's a message of support, it's a message of comfort, it's a message of perspective, and also of optimism. So you're saying all of these in one. Rav Sternbach notes that the idea is by including the mourner among the Aveilut Tzion V'Yishalayim, you are saying that just as ultimately there will be a nichum for the Aveilut Tzion V'Yishalayim, so too there will be a nichum for this Avel, but also more directly right now, that the mourner is not alone, that he shares in this experience with all of Kali Yisrael, and that itself should be a source of nechama. Now, the usage of the word hamakom is interesting. We know sometimes we use hamakom to mean a Kaddish Baruch Hu, but it's not incredibly common. So the idea that we're using it in this phrase was also the topic of some discussion. There are some who suggested that it's just out of a desire not to use a more specific reference to a Kaddish Baruch Hu and to connect it with tragedy, while others thought that it had a more affirmative value to it. The Tzitz Eliezer has a tshuva where he refers to the fact that the Gemara says that after the Chorban, there's a Gemara in Chagiga, in the beginning of Chagiga, that after the Chorban, that a Kaddish Baruch Hu had set aside a place for mourning over the Chorban until there will be a Nechama, until the Malchus will be restored. So when we make reference to the Makom, we're talking about that place that connects to the Avelus over Tzion V'Yerushalayim. Rav Dester in the Mechtav Meliyahu, so he suggests that the usage of the word Makom is to contrast with time, because in English you have the expression, time heals all wounds, and we want to convey that it's not really such a natural thing, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving a bracha, is giving a special gift in allowing one to feel nechama, and it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically and not just the automatic process. So we are using a word that means place in order to contrast it with time, which is an interesting idea. And others understand that it's a reference to the makom in the next world that the Nifter is now occupying, which reflects what they accomplished, and some therefore say that it reflects the makom in this world that the person created, and that should be a source of nechama. And one way or another, as the Shuvah Siyas Shev Yitzchak points out, so on some level it's a reference to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and that could again be a reference to this week's Parsha, that just like God models this act of Nicham Avelim in this week's Parsha, so too we want to copy that model, and we want to pick up that whole practice from him. So that seems to have a major role, this idea of Hamakom Minachem, but it's not clear that that's actually the Nichum. It could be this is a bracha that we express to the Avelim, and it's not necessarily supposed to represent the whole mitzvah. Now, the Chafetz Chaim, in his Avos Chesed, he says it could be that this is a minimal level of fulfillment, but to be able to go further and to bring more specific nechama is definitely preferable. And Rav Moshe writes in a tshuva that it's actually not part of the nichum, it's rather just a way to close the visit. So the Gemara has a number of examples of people who, of the great Amoraim and great Rabbanim, who would come to the house of an Avel and the different things that they would say to try to bring nechama to the individual. But of course, this is something that is very tricky because, as we know, and as a famous YouTube video highlights, it's also possible to do damage by saying the wrong thing. So there's no question that saying less would be better than saying the wrong thing. But at the same time, if one is able to skillfully and sensitively say the proper thing and the helpful thing, so that is what the mitzvah is. And the Gemara actually, in a few places, in referring to a Beis Avel, uses the expression Beit Hamya. And that phrase, Rashi explains that it's called that because Matimin Oso Bidvarim, that you're able to make things better with words. Tam here presumably could be translated in both senses, taste and reason, that you give them some kind of a context and you give them a better feeling about things. You're able to lift them up. So that is done through conversation if you can do it effectively. And it does seem that in a significant sense, that is the mitzvah. There are also indications that we try to accomplish this in a way that has some symbol of success. And there are some who suggest, Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Sternbach and others pointed to various early Makaros to give the impression that there's an inyan of the Avil also accepting the Nichumim. It's what it sounds like from a Gemara in Mordechai, which talks about the Avil nodding. And that Zohar and others suggest that the Avil should say something to convey that they have agreed with, they accepted the words that the Menachem is trying to say. So that's an inyan as well. And together with it, the Nichum is not only about the conversation, but it's also about trying to do actions that can come and help bring greater comfort through physical aspects. So, for example, if the family is now going to be financially strapped because, let's say, whoever passed away was the breadwinner, or there's a large financial burden that comes along with it. So to raise money on behalf of the Avelim is also a fulfillment of Nichum Avelim. Each situation has its own particular focus that's going to require attention and sensitivity to know what to do. The Shulchan Aruch writes that one shouldn't be menachim to Avelim ke'echad. So Rav Sternbach has a discussion about that where he notes that you might think this is an issue of ein osim mitzvahs chavilos chavilos. So he says, no, it's clearly more than that. It's reflective of the idea that Nichum Avelim is supposed to be personalized. It's supposed to be something that is tailored to the individual and to what they're actually going through. And therefore, if you're going to try to be Menachem to Avelim at once, so you're probably shortchanging one of them because you are not addressing his specific situation. As Tzitzeliezer notes, that's true when you're actually in the process of real Nichum Avelim. He notes that when Friday night, when the Avelim come to shul, and we say Hamakom to all of them at once, so that's not a violation of this idea. We're talking specifically about the focused Nichum Avelim when one is really trying to fulfill that mitzvah, so we shouldn't underappreciate the idea that everyone needs his own tailored and directed approach. And it's also reflected in the Tshuvas HaRashba, where the often cited Tshuva of the Rashba, in Siman Yud Ches, where he talks about brachos on mitzvos, and he talks about why there's no bracha on certain mitzvos where we don't know if it's necessarily going to be a fulfillment. So he includes Nichum Avelim in that, which highlights the idea that Nichum Avelim is a challenge. It's not clear necessarily that you're going to succeed, and therefore we can't make a bracha in advance because we don't know if we will indeed fulfill the mitzvah. It's also an inyan to find the right time to make sure that your words are going to be accepted. In the earlier Svarims, they talk about not coming in the first 3 days. And the explanation for that would be that the first 3 days is the most intense time of grief, and it's going to be very hard to be able to soften that at all in the first 3 days. Some understand the notion that it's portrayed as days of bechi, as days of crying, and therefore to try to bring comfort as if one shouldn't be crying, so that is premature. Nonetheless, you don't really see that observed so much nowadays, and in particular, it's brought in the name of many gedolim that they did go specifically in the first 3 days. And it could be because of this whole notion, they were afraid that the Avil would be alone and that nobody would be coming to see them. So there's many reports of Gedolim coming specifically then. I think overall, this whole practice of distinguishing between the first 3 days and the later days is not really something that we see in practice nowadays. But Rav Sternbach does suggest that there still is a different character to those days. He has a tshuva batis and a tshuva svan hagos, and therefore one should recognize that the first 3 days are more intense, and that Menachem is there basically for support and companionship, and is not necessarily going to have so much success or possibility of minimizing that bechi. And then after the first 3 days, it shifts a little bit, and trying to soften things more directly is more of a possibility. There's another earlier idea which certainly does not seem to be fulfilled nowadays, does not seem to be in practice nowadays, but may also be instructive of the purposes, and that's the idea that one wouldn't come to be Menachem Avel at night. So again, that's not something that we see in practice at all very often, especially with people's work schedules. So the nighttime is often the busiest time at a Shiva house. So some understand that it's simply about consideration. It means not to come too late at night when the Avel is supposed to try to go to sleep. So that might be something that is just tailored to every situation, depending on what the realities are. But more conceptually, so there are those who suggest that this idea that you shouldn't come at night is maybe reflective of the goal, that if the purpose is that you want to try to bring some nechama, so at night people are often more emotional, and it's more difficult to be able to be receptive to such messages, so maybe that's the idea. It's not a time when you're going to have much success in being Menachem the Avos. Again, that particular expression of it is not something that we see practiced, but maybe the mentality behind it is also something to be aware of and something to bring into the sensitivity of the experience. It's also a notion the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, and this is often not appreciated how significant this is, that it's not appropriate to be Menachem an Avel when Meso Muta Lefanav, that until the time of the funeral, under normal circumstances, it's not appropriate to start Nichum. Nichum is only supposed to begin after the funeral. It's not clear whether this is an absolute din or is good advice, but it's certainly an inyan that Chazal took seriously. And to appreciate that the time for Nichum, to say we have to start being comforted, is not come yet. When the mace is still waiting to be buried, the grief is so fresh, it's not going to be successful, and maybe it shouldn't be successful. It's not the proper time yet, and the Tiferes Yisrael in the Mishnah writes that it's going to perhaps provoke frustration and irritation in the Avelim if one tries to convey that message at that point. And others note that this may also reflect the whole dual nature of Nichum Avelim, and the Sefer told the Shimshon to Pirkei Avos, who makes this point, that if you're going to try to offer Nichum before the body's even buried, so that is disrespectful to the mace. It's as if saying, okay, let's start moving on while he's even waiting for his own kvura, and that undermines this whole purpose of Nichum Avelim, and especially the double purpose. But even just the fact that the Avel is not ready for it is certainly a factor here, and the Binyan Siyan has a tshuva where he notes this in considering the question: if somebody, Rechmanus Litzlan, has lost two relatives at once, but one has been buried and one has not been buried, so one might think, okay, so then I could be Menachem the Avel on the first loss and wait for the second loss. And the Binyan Siyan notes that that would still be inappropriate, because it's in a state of aninus and a state of fresh loss towards the second, that wouldn't be a problem for any kind of nichum. But we do begin nichum immediately after the kvura, and that's where the shura takes place at the Beis HaKvaras, at that immediate time. And that's not necessarily the same as the tshuva in the Shevet HaKohasi that points out that this is just the beginning. It doesn't mean that those who are at the shura should think they don't have to go to the shiva house, but this starts the whole process of Nichum Avelim, and it's pretty much explicit in the Rambam in Mishneh Torah, where he writes that after that the Avelim go home, and then on each of the days the Nechama is offered to them by both the new visitors and the same visitors who were there before. Even it sounds like from the Rambam that actually one should go every day, and it's interesting that we don't necessarily find that to be a contemporary practice either. Most people, unless they're very, very close, don't necessarily go every day, but it is interesting to note that there does seem to be such a suggestion in the Rambam and elsewhere that that's really the appropriate practice. There is another halacha which the Gemara has in Maikatan and is brought in Shulchan Aruch and is also underappreciated. Most people are probably not even aware of this, but it has a lot of significance, la halacha. The Gemara says that Ein Hamanachimim Rishayim Ledaber Ad Sheyiftach Avel Tchila, that the Menachemim should not speak until the Avel speaks first. And it's a whole discussion why that is and what exactly that means. Some suggest that this is in the spirit of Tzedek HaDin. That's how the Aruch HaShulchan understands that this is a place for the Avel to say something to acknowledge God's justice, and then that begins the process. Others say that the Avel, by saying something to acknowledge his grief, so that sets the tone for the visitors to be able to start saying something. So this whole notion is also relevant to the idea that we have to be very focused and appreciative of the individual experience of every Avel. And this could perhaps give us an insight how to understand a phrase in the Gemara in the first part of Maseches Brachos. So that there, the Gemara talks about the schar that comes for different mitzvos. And we mentioned before that phrase, Beitamia. So there, the Gemara says something which seems somewhat surprising. The Gemara says, Agra de Beitamia shtika, that the reward for visiting a house of mourning is measured by the silence. So that's a little difficult to understand, because we just said before that the main mitzvah of Nichum Aveilum involves conversation and interacting. And in fact, that very phrase, Beit Tamia, we saw that's how Rashi explains it. It's a reference to the conversation, to the words that are said. So it's hard to understand what that means when it says that the reward for the Beit Tamia, for the house of speaking of words, is measured by the silence. So there are a number of interpretations. Some understand that to be a reference to the Avela, maybe in the spirit of Ayidom Aaron. In some traditions, particularly the Temani tradition, there is a atmosphere of total silence in the Beis Avel, but that's not the tradition among Ashkenazim, for sure. And that's not so easily understood in light of these points. So perhaps we could suggest that what it means is that if one is going to come to a Beis Avel and he's going to come pre-programmed with his standardized speech that he gives to every Avel, so he's not going to really be able to fulfill the mitzvah. Every Avel is in a different place and needs comments that are suited specifically for where they're holding. So if you just launch into it without getting a sense of the mood of the Avel and the mindset of the Avel, it's not going to be very effective. So perhaps what the Gemara means, it says, Agra de Beitamia Shtika, that the reward for the Shiva call, the measure of success, is going to be evaluated based on the silence before, that the extent to which the Menachem is able to wait and listen and see where the Avel is holding, that's going to dictate the success of the visit. He's not going to be able to respond properly unless he is first sensitive to hearing where the Avel is holding, and that's how the mitzvah will be assessed. So that's a part of it. There are other understandings as well, and it's also the fact that sometimes it's just not going to happen. Sometimes the Avel is not going to talk, so then could be that you could wait for a little while. And many had the practice that if the Avel doesn't seem ready to talk at all and is not initiating conversation, so and initiating an interaction, so then it might be appropriate to just sit and be there with the Avel and then say Hamokum Menachem and leave if that's indeed the proper atmosphere, if that's what's being conveyed. And it's recorded that a number of Gedolim had that approach in these situations. Some tried to evoke a comment from the Avel in order to be able to measure the tone and to respond, and others would just say Hamokum Menachem and move on from that. So it's also a sensitive point, the question of whether there can be any other conversation at a Beis Avel. Really, it's inappropriate in general to be talking about anything other than the mace. But it's also true that sometimes the Avel is in a very heavy mood, and the only way to be able to have a meaningful visit is to first talk about other things. And that's also a sensitive call, to know when it's appropriate to talk a little bit about something else and when to recognize that that's a serious distraction from the mitzvah that you're there for. Once the interaction has become too much or has become enough, so then the Shulchan Aruch says that if the Avel shakes his head and he indicates he doesn't want them to be there anymore, so then they have to understand to leave. And as the Aruch HaShulchan notes, that we're not knowing anymore to have a specific sign like shaking the head, so we have to be even more sensitive, and we have to try to be aware on our own when it's gone on too long and when the Avel needs to be able to be left alone a little bit, which is very similar to what we see in the context we discussed last week. We saw a similar point raised in the context of Bikur Cholim, that it's crucial that the Mevaker be able to appreciate when he should leave and to recognize that it could be that there is a point where he's already been there too long, and to have that sensitivity and to function based on that is crucial for both mitzvahs. There is an inyan that's brought in the Svarim of sitting down specifically in Nichum Aveilim, and we find that in the context of Bichur Cholim as well. So some suggest that that's not necessarily about a specific position, but it's about making the statement that you're ready to be there in a kviistic way, and you're not looking to just run out, but also that you are sitting with them, that you are experiencing what they're going through with them, you're being present for their suffering, and to be able to sit down and be with them is reflective of that also. There's a relevant discussion to that also about the question of whether Avelim have a mitzvah of Nichum Avelim towards the other Avelim who are with them. So there are some who suggest that that should be minimized because it looks like they are abandoning their own, while others say that that's, the Nitei Gavriel has discussion about this, that this is actually the Iker Nichum Aveilim, the idea of Imcha Anochi Betzara, that one can display that he's actually mourning together with someone else and be a companion in that. So that is considered to be maybe the Iker Nichum Aveilim. So that then leads to a discussion of whether that means that an Avel can actually leave his own Beis Avel to go be Menachem with somebody in a different Beis Avel. That's a more complicated discussion, but there is a notion that is perhaps relevant here, that there is a specific perspective that an Avel at that same time is able to offer, and that's something to keep in mind also. We promised last week we did certain things that we didn't get to in the context of Bikur Cholim, and we mentioned that there are some parallels in Nichum Aveilim and Bikur Cholim, so just to mention some of them. So one of the major questions that we didn't get to in Bikur Cholim and comes up in Nichum Aveilim also is the question of a phone call. So this is an issue, there's an extensive literature about this in the context of Bikur Cholim. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this, and a number of other poskim also had tshuvas about that. And part of the reason they all discussed this, if you look at all of those tshuvas from around that time, see they were all written to the same person. So somebody wrote a letter to a number of poskim and asked them this question, do you fulfill Bikur Cholim on the phone? And there the answers generally fell into a common formulation that it's not perfect, but it's not nothing. It's better than nothing, but it's not perfect. It's better to be able to come in person. But if you're not able to come in person, then to speak on the phone is certainly better than nothing. You have a similar approach when it comes to Nichum Aveilim, but there are some differences. So, for example, the fact that we have the double chesed and that there is a kavod to the mace that's also shown by being there in person, so that's harder to do on the telephone. And that's something to keep in mind. There's some who suggest that if you can't be there in person, so you should do one thing for the survivors and one thing for the mace. And maybe for the survivors, you'll call them on the phone, and for the mace, you'll learn Mishnayos or something like that in order to recognize that really you're trying to be mechabed both of them, be menachem both of them, and that's normally affected, that's normally accomplished by coming to the house. But if you can't come to the house, so you'll try to address it in other ways. It's also an interesting question along these lines that if one is not able to be there in person, so what's better? So should it be a phone call or should it be a letter? So there are some who suggest that it all depends on the nature of your relationship, that if a person actually has a relationship with the Avelim and he needs to actually connect with them directly and comfort them in that sense, so then the phone call is better because they'll actually have that interaction. While if the Menachem here doesn't really know the Avelim, but he knew the Nifter, so then sometimes the letter is a more effective way to do it because then he can write about the qualities of the Nifter, and then the Avelim will have the letter and they can show that, and that's a part of the Kavod, and that might be more effective than a phone call. So it highlights again the fact that everything has its own particular focus depending on the situation. But as far as the mitzvah overall, so while many do have this general in-between attitude to phone calls, both in terms of Nichum Avelim and Bikur Cholim, so there are some who take a different position. So for example, Rav Huttner, in his letters, so he suggests that there's two opposite extremes. Well, most are in the middle, but he's on the extreme on both. He says that when it comes to Bikur Cholim, the mitzvah is fulfilled 100% on the phone, because he was of the perspective that we discussed last week, that Bikur specifically means to find out what's going on, to find out the situation of the Chola and how you can be helpful, and that he maintained you could do over the phone. While the purpose of Nichum Avelim is specifically to be there and to create a presence around the Avel, and therefore he thinks that there's 0% fulfillment on the phone. So he had in both extremes. Even if one says there's no fulfillment of Nichum Avelim or of Bikur Cholim, depending on how you understand it, there's still a mitzvah of chesed. There's still no question that you're bringing some kind of benefit to the person, so it may not fulfill the technical requirements of Bikur Cholim. In that context, there's some who pointed to a comment of the Maharsha, who noted that the pasuk that the Gemara darshins in Yisro to say the obligation of Bikur Cholim has the language of Yelchu, you should go. They understand that to mean that you specifically have to physically go in order to fulfill it. So even if one takes such a position, it's certainly a chesed to call somebody who's sick and to try to be helpful, or to call somebody who's in Avelis. But it's not perfect when it's possible to actually be there. And as some point out, that there are a couple of problems. One problem that we've all experienced is that the timing can be complicated and that it puts a pressure on an avel to answer a phone specifically when it rings, which is very often not so convenient for him, and so the situation is often not so conducive to really speaking when there are people around. While a letter, or nowadays an email, could be opened at any time at the convenience of the Avel, and that's more tailored to what he's going through. And also, significantly, the issue that we mentioned before of having the Avel speak first is not so easily done on the telephone. It's a much less natural kind of interaction. And that's not nothing. As we said, that's a significant concept, both as a din and something that could impact the whole success, the whole fulfillment of the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. And therefore, the fact that the phone call is limited in that regard is something to think about. It's something that is a significant consideration. There is also an unfortunate discussion, both in the context of Bikur Cholim and Nichum Avelim. So here I see the question, is there an advantage to do a video call or a Zoom? So the truth is, that does have a lot that the traditional methods doesn't necessarily have. And of course, this is something which spread to a tremendous degree over the course of the COVID pandemic. And I think many have found that it is very effective, and that especially when there are set times that are designated for the Zoom interactions, which is a concept you don't really have by the phone calls, that wasn't the practice, to say, okay, call specifically during this time, and people who are physically here will be at a different time. So that made phone calls, makes phone calls complicated. But when there's a Zoom, so very often there's designated time for the Zoom, which is different than when the people are physically there. And it allows people who didn't have a havamin of being able to come because of physical distance to interact in a much more meaningful way. So there is a lot to be said for what Zoom has been able to accomplish towards this mitzvah, probably in a greater sense than phone calls or letters. And the letter, again, has the maila that it's something that can last and something that can be showed to others, which is a very significant point as well. But definitely the Zoom format does have these advantages. So the unfortunate issue that we mentioned that it shows up both in the context of Nichum Aveilim and Bikur Cholim is the fact that there's a discussion in Poskim about what if, unfortunately, one person is a sone of the other. Let's say if there's animosity between them. So does that impact whether there should be a visit? So in some of the Makaris, it says that there's some hesitation about this. And it may depend on how it comes about. So some were concerned that it would look like if it's of a certain type of animosity, if this person shows up at the shiva or shows up at the hospital bed, that it looks like they're gloating. It looks like they're happy to see that person in a state of suffering. So that would, of course, mean a very intense kind of animosity. But as others point out, whether the commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, perhaps appropriately called the Beis Hillel, makes this point that if there is enough of a attitude of reconciliation that can be brought into the experience, so then it could be a time to be able to make shalom, and in that case it would be a tremendous kavod to the nifter, which itself is a added element here, the fact that there is this dual component, so one has to do with a relationship with the aveilim, and one would have to do with a relationship to the nifter, and very often that could complicate things. One might have had a good relationship with the nifter and a bad relationship with the aveilim, and therefore there could be awkwardness, but if this could be a situation where one could bring about shalom, which maybe would require reaching out through somebody else first, sending a message, is it appropriate? Will it be welcomed to come to the Beis Avel? But if so, with enough receptiveness and enough planning, so it could be that it might be a situation of making shalom, and that would be a big kavod, ein lecha kavod gadol mizeh, to the nifter, and then that's something of a whole different nature. We should point out, it's very much a practical factor here, that in general, when it comes to mitzvos of chesed and the like, so our mitzvos overall, so we don't say that somebody who's involved in learning is pater from those mitzvos, or pater from any mitzvos. Normally we say, osig mitzvah pater min ha-mitzvah, but when it comes to Talmud Torah, we don't say that unless it's a mitzvah she'efshar lasos l'idei acherim. So Torah doesn't pater you, but if it's a mitzvah others can do, so then you are pater. So in the case of Nichum Aveilim, it seems that it's never considered to be a mitzvah that's efshar lasos l'idei acherim, and that it's always going to be a reason to be mevatel Torah, especially if there's any kind of significant relationship that happened there, that was there. And on one level, it's simply about the numbers, that all the people who come are able to increase the kavod hames, and that's significant. But also, as we've been saying, that there is a unique situation for every avel, and within that, the relationship between the avel and any other person is unique. So no other person is able to bring the same nichum to that avel that this individual can. So he can never say, really, that it's a mitzvah she'af shalasos l'idei acherim, somebody else will take care of it, there are other people going. Even if there are many other people going, they're not going to be able to bring the nichum in the same way, and therefore that creates a specific obligation on everyone who does have a kind of relationship, and it's possible for them to go, and that makes them uniquely capable of performing this mitzvah in a way that nobody else can. So we should take that very much to heart, as we at the same time fervently wish for the day when there will no longer be a need to be Menachem anyone, neither the Avelim Tzion of Yerushalayim or the Avelim of family members, and we should know only Simchas, and we should have a wonderful week and a wonderful Shabbos. Yashikach.